Hi, everybody. I'm Beanie Combs Ranos, and welcome again to the Ask Beanie Show. And these days, I think that we all need somebody to talk to. That is for sure. I mean, just think, we're now going into the second month where we're dealing with the coronavirus reality. And I think in the beginning, including myself, it was like, no, this really cannot be happening, and it's just going to disappear within a couple of days or a couple of weeks. But of course, the reality is very, very, very different. You know, we're now dealing with the impact of the virus on our lives, on our jobs, on our health, on our social relationships, of course, our mental health. You know, people, millions and millions of people around the country here in the United States are asking the questions, am I going to be able to pay my rent, buy food, basic things, the stress on our relationships, am I going to lose my business? Is my job that I have counted on for so many years, is it going to go away? When will the businesses be reopening? The social isolation that so many people are really having to deal with. Homeschooling, having your children, as much as we love our children, having our children around 24 hours a day. I mean, all of this is putting an enormous amount of stress on ourselves and our lives and our relationships. And what's really interesting, and I think it's a positive thing, is that calls to mental health helplines are surging. And that's a good thing. I think that people need to reach out. I think that we need to reach out not just if there is a crisis, and not just if there is a coronavirus pandemic, but if we're feeling overwhelmed, whether or not we're talking about our depression, there's just feeling that it is over the top, or the anxiety that just doesn't seem to go away regardless of what we do. We're exercising, we're meditating, we're breathing. So I think it's a good thing that people are really giving themselves permission to reach out and ask for help. And of course, the reaching out and ask for help number here on the Ask Beanie Show is 888-874-4888. And I also want to remind you is that the Progressive Radio Network, we have a voicemail, and you can leave me any questions or comments that you may have about anything that I'm talking about on the show, or whether or not you have any personal issues that you would like to discuss with me. And that voicemail number is 862-800-6805. Again, that's 862-800-6805. And what some of the studies are showing is that Americans are really doubling down on our worst habits to cope with emotional stress related to the virus. For example, this is these were numbers that really actually surprised me. Alcohol sales have jumped, with spirits up to 75%. So people are reaching for alcohol rather than trying to walk around the block or lift weights or do some cardio exercises in their homes or in their apartments. Wine sales are up 66%, and beer 42%. In March, cannabis reached an all-time high in this month of March, even though medical experts warn us that marijuana and vaping and tobacco may actually increase the risk of the virus. People are typically exercising less and eating more, not a good thing. And there may also be some long-term effects of post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and anxiety. as a result of what is going on with the coronavirus and the consequences of this virus that is affecting all of us to a greater or lesser degree. But if you find yourself, and I think a lot of people are saying, I should be grateful and I should be happy that I have not been diagnosed or that I do not have the virus. But if you find yourself judging your emotions or responses, remind yourself, you need to be kind to yourself. You need to remind yourself that your feelings are normal and justified. And we are all still trying to find a way to deal with a very, very new reality. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, and all of us are feeling overwhelmed at times, focus on breathing instead of reaching for your phone, instead of reaching for alcohol or wine or beer. And I think it's also important to really set a news and social media cutoff time. I have patients that are literally glued to the television constantly, almost, 24 hours a day when they are awake. And it's not a good thing. What I have found, you check in a couple of times a day, find out on any, new updates, and try as best as we're all trying to have a regular routine for ourselves every day. Many people now, of course, people who are working are working from home. And what I have found to be really helpful for me is I'm trying to create as normal a routine, a daily routine, as possible. In fact, I'm trying to replicate the same kind of routine that I had prior to the virus. So I wake up in the morning, and the first thing, I'll do is do my exercises. And I find it's a great way to start the day. I do my leg exercises. I have all of my weights. And after 15 or 20 minutes, even if I don't have a lot to do on any particular day, I feel good. I feel less tense and really ready to start the day, whatever that might mean. And of course, I'm seeing all of my patients, everybody that I treat, on Zoom or on Skype or on the telephone. And is it as satisfying? I think neither for myself or for my patients, but we're doing the best that we can possibly do. And I'm finding, and I would be really curious to hear whether you're also finding ways to just get out of the apartment and walk around. And of course, we're wearing our masks and our gloves, and we're practicing social distance. But it does make a big difference. Yesterday, Sunday, was a beautiful, beautiful day, and I took Cha-Cha, our little dog, for about a 2-mile walk. And there were people, of course, walking around and joggers running in Riverside Park here in New York City. But everybody, it was really interesting. People were all wearing masks, as was I, and gloves, and maintaining social distance. And we were really able to, I think, for the most part, put the virus crisis aside for even a short period of time and enjoy the day and look at the sky and take in the beauty of the blossoming trees and flowers. And I think that we all need to do good things for ourselves every single day to just break the monotony and to help us deal with our fears and our scares and our worries and our anxieties. And also how important it is, and I know Dr. Gary Nohm, he's been reminding us about this for years and years and years, but it is really important to eat healthily. I know it's easy. It's easy to just go, and if there's a store open, to grab a slice of pizza. But let's try really to keep in mind the importance of eating healthily, since we do need to keep our immune system strong. And, you know, we do need to keep a check on how much sugar and, again, how much alcohol we are consuming. And to be able to understand, and I say this to myself and my husband Jim and I, we talk about this a lot. There's certain things in life that we really have absolutely no control over at all. But there are many, many things in life, even during this crisis time, that we do. And we can get regular sleep. And we can eat properly. And we can move around. And we can reach out to friends and family, whether or not it's on the phone or on the computer, so that there are things that we are able to do that are really in our best interest. Nothing is perfect. We may never go back to life as it was. And yet how important it is to ask ourselves every single day and to remind ourselves of all of the really positive things that we can do, that we have control over in our lives, to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. And of course, you hear me talking about this all the time, the importance of exercising. And what I have discovered, and you know, I typically was going to a gym 3-4 times a week, but you know, I don't even miss going to the gym. I'm finding that having weights at home and doing cardio exercises, and I have found some really, really great online workouts where there's music and I'm able to look at a teacher who's teaching us different kinds of moves, so that we're able to keep ourselves moving and keep ourselves fit, even though life has changed so much in the last couple of months. And also the importance of getting sufficient sleep. And, you know, when it comes to respecting each other's boundaries, there have been so many articles in magazines and in the newspapers about the real challenges of dealing with people, even people that we love, on a 24-hour-a-day basis. And I think it's important. It's important for, if you have young children, for them to understand that mom and dad, and if they have siblings, that we all need our space, and to be able to communicate all of this in a really clear and respectful way. And if things are getting a little difficult and challenging, to be able to say, look, I think we need to take a break. If you're finding that the conversation, if you're finding that the communications are really getting off track, I have found in my own life, Jim and I have found that, look, if things are not in our particular conversation, to be able to say, look, you know what? I think we need to take a break. I think we need to take a time out. And why don't we meet in 15 or 20 minutes or even an hour, and we can resume the conversation after we're feeling better, and after we may not be feeling so upset and angry, and so that you can give yourself permission, even though it's sometimes very, very challenging to deal with difficult and challenging situations in the best possible way. But we have to be really mindful. We have to be very, very mindful of the importance of really respecting ourselves and respecting the people around us, because these days most people are not getting any breaks from one another. So hopefully if you have, you know, more than one room, you can go into another room and give yourself and give your family members the time that we all need to just recharge, because you can't be with anybody 24 hours a day. I don't care how much you love the people who you're around. We all need our personal space, and people really have to learn to respect each other's personal space. You know, and again, I mentioned about the importance of just taking a walk around the block. And the weather, of course, is starting to be really, really beautiful. And as long as you're doing what you need to do, which is, you know, wearing the gloves and wearing a mask and keeping the social distance, a short walk, it's really a great way to improve, you know, one's mood. I know many, many people that I treat, they're real believers in meditation. They find it to be very soothing. They find it to be very, very helpful. So if you have never tried it, you may want to give it a shot. And if you find, however, that meditation is not for you, then, you know, that's okay too. But you also have to give yourself permission. For example, you've gone through everything that you can possibly think of to try to alleviate your depression, to try to alleviate your anxiety and your fears and your upsets. And you're finding perhaps that nothing is quite working the way you would hope. And that's the time that I hope you give yourself permission to reach out to a professional person. And, you know, entering into a therapeutic relationship, it doesn't mean for the majority of people that you're going to be in therapy for 1,000 years. But what my patients have found, what I have found, is just getting a second opinion, a second perspective can really, really help you, you know, just kind of get yourself back on track. Now, of course, so many other issues, marital problems, sexual problems, severe mental health problems, in many, many ways have really taken a back seat to what's going on with the coronavirus. And what I've noticed online is that, of course, therapists are now almost completely treating patients on Zoom or on Skype or on the phone. And, you know, who knows? That may be the way therapy is going to be working for many, many people. I have to tell you, my preference, however, is to see my patients face-to-face in my office here in New York City and in East Hampton. But at this time, that is not possible, and we're all doing the best that we can possibly do under the circumstances. But you know what? There was a really, really nice piece in the New York Times, and this was not a doom and gloom article, but this was an article, and the headline was, "I like it, actually, why so many older people are thriving in the lockdown." And, you know, the article went on to say that many New Yorkers in this older age group, you know, 70s and 80s and older, are actually thriving during this challenge. And, you know, they're saying that they're skilled at being alone, not fearful about their careers, assuming that, of course, they're not still actively working. They're not worried about prospects. They're emotionally more experienced at managing the great disruption of everyday life that is affecting everyone. And the reality, and this is according to a psychiatrist, Dr. Gary M. Kennedy, who's the director of geriatric psychiatry at Montefiore Medical Center and a professor at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. So what he's saying is that the reality is that older adults as a group have a positivity bias or tendency to see the good side of situations, including this situation. And then he goes on to say that their pessimism and anxiety tend to abate with age, and that they're no longer striving for material achievements. So what matters to them now is what's emotionally satisfying, and they're more likely to say, I've been through this before. And, you know, I'm actually hearing this from more people than I would have expected, that, you know, initially was like, oh my goodness, how am I going to get through the days? And yet people have no choice but to adjust, and people are really getting used to, which is not to say that we don't want to go back to, you know, our old, more normal way of living, but people are actually adjusting reasonably well to this new reality. They're Zooming. In fact, it was something that I never would have done on Saturday evening. Jim and I, we Zoomed with some friends of ours who are from New York, but spending some time in Coconut Grove, just out of Miami. They kind of got caught there because they certainly were not going to be coming back to New York City, because here we are in the middle of everything here in New York. And in a thousand years, this is never something that I would have, you know, would have done. But it was fun. It was actually fun. And many of my friends, my women friends from various different women's business organizations, they're scheduling, in quotes, cocktail parties or meetings. And it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to see people on the screen. It's not something that I ever would have wanted to do. I was not a therapist who was ever really considering doing therapy on Zoom or on Skype. But when we don't have options, we really do need to adapt and look at the bright side of things. And I'm just hoping, you know, that people who are really in a situation, in a dire situation where they don't have health care and don't have food and are really concerned about how they're going to be paying their rent, whether or not they're going to have jobs, whether or not they've been able to get any money from the stimulus package from the government, whether they've been successful at filing unemployment benefit requests, that people are finding a way to come together and to help each other in the best possible ways, until hopefully this tide is going to turn. Although there was a recent, actually today, report from the federal government, and there are predictions that things are not going to be getting back to normal any time soon at all. So that we're all kind of in this adaptive mode every day, trying to find ways to live our lives in the best possible way. And that's all we can do, is control the things that we have control over, and realize the difference between the things that we have no control over and the things that we do, and to really focus as much as we possibly can on things that we can actually control. There was a very interesting, I thought, and a very timely article in a magazine, and the article was an essential mental health check-in. And it's really true when you think about it. Every year, most of us anyways, we schedule appointments with our doctors and our dentists to make sure that our body and teeth are strong and healthy. So doesn't our mental health merit the same kind of attention? I think it does, and I think that most people probably don't think about it in the same kind of way as we do about getting our annual mammograms or bone density tests. So although an annual psychological checkup may not be feasible for everyone in the current healthcare system, and hopefully one day, very soon, that is going to change. Individuals should still feel empowered to explore their mental well-being. And a self-exam is a really, I think, very succinct exam that I'm going to ask you to consider right now. It's not an official diagnostic tool, so in no way does it substitute for a professional assessment or treatment. But these are a number of things that I would like you to honestly consider. So, number one, how are you really doing? So, if you're looking at your mood, do you have days when I feel down? Of course, we all have days when we feel down. But over the past year, I haven't experienced a period of depressed mood that lasted longer than 2 weeks or negatively affected my work or relationships. And hopefully that is true for you. There's enough going on in my life to keep me absorbed, and I have interests or hobbies I engage in regularly, and that would be the best case scenario for most of us. And if you're looking at your relationships, especially now, you know, you have to take an honest look. You know, are you really happy with the quality of your relationship, the people who you care about? Are they respectful of you and your needs? Are they loving? Are they trustworthy? Because I think it is important, you know, not just once a year, but to take a look at the reality of our relationships. And of course, we all go through lots and lots of ups and downs in our lives, with our partners and in our relationships of all kinds. But the most important thing is that you hopefully have people in your life when problems arise, as problems are always going to arise, that they are serious, that they care enough about you, that they care enough about your relationship to acknowledge and address and resolve problems as best as one can. And these are the kinds of people that we want in our life. And if you're looking at your professional and financial stability, and that's also something too, especially now, I mean, for people who are in the market, I mean, it's a very, very scary time. I know I read a lot of business articles about how this is the best time to be buying stocks, but for people who have little or no money, it is a very, very scary time. If you're thinking and worrying about, am I going to have a job? Is the business that I just opened very recently, is it going to survive? I mean, these are very, very real and very scary issues that people are having to really tackle right now. Also, looking at things that I think a lot of people would rather not look at, you know, substance abuse, and asking yourself, is your alcohol or drug use? Of course, you know, we shouldn't be drinking and we shouldn't be using drugs, but is it under control? And would others in my life agree? Because when people are really stressed, again, we have options. We can choose constructive ways to deal with our anxiety and our depression and our fears and our upset, or we can engage in really destructive and self-destructive means as well. So in doing a self-inventory, you really need to be honest with yourself. This is another little area that this test asked us to consider. My temper. Is my temper typically under control? Do I use physical aggression to intimidate others? People don't often tell me to calm down or think of me as hot-headed. Do I hold grudges or plot revenge against those who have wronged me? And of course, if we're dealing with people, whether we're talking about anxiety or depression or temper that is oftentimes out of control, it's always about trying to figure out what is it all about? What is my depression about? What is my anxiety about? Why am I always so angry and so volatile? And sometimes it's really difficult to figure out all these things, on your own, which is why having some therapy, even some short-term therapy, can really give you a new perspective on things that you've not been able to figure out on your own. You know, for example, if the depression or anxiety has to do with old issues, what I call skeletons in the closet or unfinished business, it's not that we can change our history. We can't change things that happened, a second ago. But there is a really effective way. And I've been a psychotherapist and a sex therapist now, and every week that I say that, I can hardly believe it. It's true. But for over 35 years, and what I've discovered that there is a very, very effective way to help people emotionally work through what did and did not happen in their family life, in their previous relationships. And it doesn't mean that you're going to forget. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to forgive people who really, really hurt you. But what you are able to do in emotionally processing all your feelings, you're able, and people say this to me all the time, that for the first time in my life, I feel like I am living in the moment, in the present, without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And when it comes to anger, anger is a very, it's normal emotion. It's an okay emotion as long as it is not out of control. And again, it's important to try to figure out, why do I feel so angry so much of the time? Many people don't know, but this is also something that can be explored so that you're able to better understand what is your anger all about, what is your temper all about, because typically underneath the volatility and the anger and the temper are feelings of sadness and depression, and with a lot of people, feelings of disrespect. And if we're looking at our physical health, we have to be honest with ourselves. Are we physically in a good place? Are we eating properly? Are we getting enough sleep? Are we exercising? And if we find that we are not, on top of our game, of course, the real question then becomes, what am I going to do about it? And the doing is tough. It's easy to acknowledge that there is a problem. I'm not sleeping enough. I'm using too many drugs. I'm drinking too much. My mood is out of control. But then, I mean, ultimately, we need to make a decision. And that decision has to do with being serious about dealing with the things that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And it's not an easy thing to do. But if we are not serious, then life can really get out of control. And that's one of the things about having been a competitive athlete all my life. I mean, we needed to have a lot of structure. There was a lot of discipline and a lot of self-discipline that goes into being a successful artist, a successful athlete. And the discipline part is not easy. I mean, there are days I'm sure that many professional athletes would rather not work out, would rather, you know, not get enough sleep, would eat too much and drink too much. And yet if we're going to do what is truly in our best interest, we need to be mindful. And what I ask my patients to do, and everybody that I treat knows that before they leave my office, I give them the same homework assignment every single week. And that assignment is to be very mindful as they go through their days, as they navigate their interactions with people and with themselves, that they are doing things that are actually in their best interest. And it's that kind of mindfulness that really can propel us onto a good path where we're being good to ourselves, where things are working out well. Or on the other hand, if we are not mindful, it's very easy for many people to just fall prey to a very destructive and self-destructive way of life. And I would say that the majority of people who, you know, contact me for therapy, it's the relationships that have been the number one problem for most of the people who find themselves in therapy with me, that the relationships have not been constructive relationships. And what many, many people have told me and many people have experienced is that they may change partners, but the dynamics in the relationships are not changed, and they get to a place in their lives where instead of blaming their partners, you know, why is this person, you know, not loving, or why is this person not present, where they get to a point, and I think we all need to get to this point sooner or later, where we have to look at ourselves and we have to ask ourselves the question, what is it about us that we continue as an example to find ourselves in relationships with people who have very little or nothing to give us? And that is the beginning when some real, real change can take place. You know, before the show, I received an email from a woman. And this woman lives in New York City, and her boyfriend lives in Connecticut. And she's actually spending some time with him. They both self-quarantined for a number of weeks, and she decided that she wanted to, you know, get away from New York City and spend some time with her boyfriend. So I gave her my blessings, and off she went. However, what's been happening is that he has not been taking all of the necessary precautions when he goes out, when he goes out to work. He wears his mask sporadically. He frequently does not wear the gloves. She told me that they were out in a park a couple of days ago, and that he was not maintaining social distance, and that she was finding that she was becoming more and more and more stressed. So I wrote back very quickly because I told her that I wanted to discuss this on the show. And I think that it has much less to do with the coronavirus than it has to do with consideration for one's partner. If you have a partner, if you're lucky enough to be in a good relationship and your partner is saying to you, it's really important for me, particularly under these circumstances, that you maintain social distance, that you do wear a mask when you go out, that you do wear gloves, even though you may think you're overreacting, although the certainly the federal guidelines are very, very clear, and these guidelines are to protect us. They are not to control us. But if your partner is not considerate of your feelings, it really has much, much less to do with the fact that we are in the midst of a pandemic and much more to do with the fact that, you know, what is it about your partner that is not sensitive, that is not empathic, and is not interested in hearing your feelings about what it is that's making you uncomfortable? That is the real issue. So this woman is going to have to decide for herself what she is going to do. She has a number of options. She can continue to feel stressed. She can continue to feel bad. She can continue to talk to her boyfriend and say, look, this is really important for me that you maintain the precautions that we are being told that we need to maintain to protect our health, to protect your health, to protect my health. But if he is not willing, if he is not willing to do what is in his best interest, then she needs to make a decision and do what is in her best interest, which is probably, unless things change dramatically today, she needs to go back to her apartment in New York City where she feels safe, where she is in control, where she is, when she goes out, maintaining social distance, where she's not going to have to feel stressed, and she's not going to have to feel badly, and she's not going to feel that she needs to badger her boyfriend over and over again to be considerate and sensitive of her feelings. And of course, these days, it's not just about feelings. When we think about it, it is truly about life and death issues. You know, I look at the statistics every night on the news. You know, people who are dying, people who are contracting the disease. So these are not just statistics that are made up. So that if you're with people, and certainly in this particular situation, if there isn't enough love, if there is not enough respect, if there is not enough intelligence to actually do what is in everybody's best interest, then this woman, I would suggest immediately that she packs her bags and that she comes back to New York where she can feel less stressed and safe in her own environment, where she is not going to have to worry about being put at risk by somebody who is supposed to love her. So I suspect that she's going to be listening to the show and will hopefully send me an email and let me know what she thinks about my advice. You know, when we're in situations, when we have partners who are not willing, and it's not just about the coronavirus, where they are not willing to sit down and discuss and think about compromises and trade-offs, moving toward a win-win resolution. This is not about being right, and this is not about the other person being wrong. When we care about people, whether or not we're talking about politics or whether we're talking about partnership and romance in our personal relationships, we are hopefully going to surround ourselves with people who are interested, who are really serious, and who are really interested in solving problems. We're able to get to a win-win resolution. So I hope this woman is listening to the show and that she actually is going to take in my good advice. Last week, too, and I thought this was something that I really wanted to just mention to you, there was a short little article in the New York Times, and the heading was that science offers a simple and effective way to bolster our own emotional health. And what do you think that science offers. And the answer, of course, is to help yourself. If we're really going to help ourselves, we need to start by helping others. You know, in the apartment building where Jim and I live in New York, there was a sign, and it was, I think, a couple that were offering for people who had difficulty, you know, getting out, that they were offering to shop, that they were offering to walk the dogs. And it's a question of, you know, what do we do in life, and not just in the midst of a crisis? You know, what can we do to help one another? You know, what do we as a society really owe to one another? I think it's so easy on a day-to-day basis for our thoughts to only revolve around ourselves and what we can get and what we're going to do. But for a society to really function in an effective way, you know, politically and economically, there needs to be an us focus. There needs to be a we focus. And, you know, one of the things that I hope, and I think that we're all hoping that's going to come about as a result of this pandemic, is that people are going to be thinking about other things other than the typical superficial things that so many people focus on. You know, are we going to make more money? What kind of a designer dress, you know, am I going to want to buy? I think this has really forced us. It's forced us to realize that we're all equal. It's true, regardless of our culture, our religion, our occupation, our financial situation, or how famous we are. This disease, the coronavirus, it treats us all equally, and perhaps we should too. And this is something that was written by Bill Gates, and I thought this was a really beautiful piece that he actually wrote, because it's a time where it's reminding us that we are all connected. And something that affects one person has an effect on another. And it is reminding us that the false borders that we have put up have little value, as this virus does not discriminate and does not need a passport. It is reminding us, by oppressing us for a short period of time, of those in this world whose whole life is spent in oppression. It's also reminding us of how precious our health is and how we have moved to neglect it through eating poor foods, manufactured food, and drinking water that is contaminated with chemicals upon chemicals. Because if we don't look after our health, and of course if we don't look after our environment, we of course get sick. And it is also, and I think that this is so true, it is reminding us, and I talk about this a lot, of the passing of time, of the shortness of life, and what is most important for us to do, which is to help each other, especially those who are old or sick. And our purpose is not just to go to stores and buy rolls and rolls of excessive toilet paper and things that we really don't need. And Bill Gates goes on to say that this virus is also reminding us of how materialistic our society has become, and how when in times of difficulty, we remember that it's the essentials that we need, the food, the water, and medicine. And, you know, talking about essentials, have you thanked the delivery person who may be delivering your food? Have you thanked the postman who, despite what's going on, is delivering our mail every single day? Or the people in the grocery stores who are coming to work every day, who are putting foods on the shelves that we are able to purchase. And, you know, one of the people that I have not thanked today, and I want to really thank today, is Jesse, our producer here at the Progressive Radio Network. How you, Jesse, are able to manage and navigate us and the shows and the Skype and the phone and everything else is something that is, it's really a tribute to who you are and to your commitment to the Progressive Radio Network. So I wanted to make sure that today that I really, really thanked you a lot for everything that you're doing. And I know that Dr. Gary Null and all of us, all of the hosts, really appreciate you. And we must never be remiss in expressing our appreciation to all the people who contribute to our lives in little and big ways. So I'm actually looking at the clock. I'm in my office here in New York City. It's not as much fun as being at the Progressive Radio Network studio, but I want to thank you all for listening and tuning in every week here on the Ask Beatty Show. Today is actually the 297th show that I've done here on the Progressive Radio Network. So I hope that this has been a fruitful show for you.